Welcome to Feltus and Kale, edition number 2, and unbelievably, the ratings were so good.
They're amazing.
For number 1, they invited us back for another week, Dan.
It's been called the most entertaining show on radio.
It has been called that. It may be a little bit misguided, but we'll go with it. We'll go with that. But the reaction was good. We found out a lot about you, Dan Feltus. We really did. We got to know, the man behind the voice or the man behind the red hair, whatever. Whatever you want to say. But we found out a lot about Dan Feltus, and we're going to find out more today. We have a great guest in our opening segment, and we are going to get to him right after these important messages. 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Welcome back to Feltus and Kale. A delight to have you with us, wherever you may be, listening on 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. I know people are listening all over Brooklyn, New York,
everywhere,
West Coast, you name it. And we have an amazing guest in our first segment today, a man I've talked to many times on the radio, and a man that you know very well. He is the Dean of the New Hampshire Senate. It is the Honorable Lou D'Alessandro. Good morning, Senator D'Alessandro.
Hey, good morning, Kenny. Great to be with you and with the mighty Dan Feltus.
You got it, the Dean. It is great to have you.
And Dan, I'm sure you know that Lou D'Alessandro played college football at the University of New Hampshire.
Yep.
I mean, it's a pretty well-known
pretty good,
fact.
I heard, too.
What number were you, Lou?
Number 87.
Number 87.
You played guard, didn't you?
No, my brother was a guard. I was an end.
Oh, you were an end. Okay.
Yeah. Those were the good days.
You know what I found out? Yeah, this is the big takeaway I had from last week's show, Lou. Here's my big takeaway from last week's show. Dan Feltus was an incredible long snapper when he played football. He was a great long snapper.
Did you know that, Lou?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, played long snapper in high school.
Oh, wow.
You know, it was kind of fell into it. Long story short, I was, receiving punts at the end of the practice, didn't want to run them back, and instead I tried snapping, and it turned out I could snap it. So they said, all right, you're a long snapper.
that's a very important position. It's a key position, and look at the guys who make the pros as long snappers. The guy from the Patriots, that's all he does. He was an Annapolis graduate, and he's been with the team for a number of years. That's an easy way to make the minimum. I'm sure that's what he's getting, but that's about $750,000. That's not bad.
It's not easy though. And, very few can do it.
That's true.
And Dan said, Lou, that he never had a bad snap in his entire career.
Well, in a game.
In a game. All right.
Some misfires in practice.
That's all that counts.
That's the only ones that are noticed.
Yeah, right.
I believe it.
So, Lou, now that Dan is not in the Senate, the head honcho there. What's on the agenda this upcoming session?
Well, I think first and foremost, we're going to miss Dan. He chaired Ways and Means, and he was the majority leader in the Senate, and had a really an outstanding performance as a state senator. What's on the agenda? The agenda is balancing the budget, making up for the deficit that we're carrying forward, continuing to fund the social programs that were instituted in the last session of the legislature, and the very positive things, hopefully continuing municipal aid, and the other, as I said, very positive things that we did in the area of health and human services and other facets of state government. We've got our hands full because of the pandemic that, of course, has really turned the country upside down, but certainly turned our state upside down. We've been under executive order for over 300 days, which means that the governor has had total control of the operations of state government and total control of the dispensing, really, of the $1.25 billion that came to us under the COVID-19 relief package. So those things have to be dealt with. We've got to look at the revenues, make sure we can fund everything that we put in place last time, and come up with some positive results. The Senate will be meeting remotely, and that's the first time that's happened. I think the House is making up its mind as to which way it's going to go. We had a terrible blow when Dick Hinch passed away because of the COVID situation. And what was he, 8 days as Speaker of the House of Representatives? And I think he and the Senate President Morse would have had a good working relationship. The new Speaker of the House was Sherman Packard, was my student when he was in high school at Bishop Bradley High School in Manchester, Kenny. And he will be the Speaker. What does that mean? I'm not sure at this point in time. You know, the composition of the House is different. Got a lot of different chairmen, chairwoman, and who knows what's going to happen. That I think that's the great mystery, what's going to happen in the House.
Well, Lou, thank you so much for the, you know, the nice words, and it was an honor to work with you and serve with you for 6 years. And, you know, Kenny, Lou and I teamed up. I was chair of Ways and Means, Lou vice chair. Lou was chair of Finance. I was vice chair of Finance, and, you know, really teamed up and did our best to put together a budget that worked for everybody, including historic education funding, municipal aid, things that Lou has led on. Lou, Senator, one of the things that you have been focused on recently is the heartbreaking situation at the New Hampshire Veterans Home in Tilton. 37 of our veterans lost to COVID, almost three quarters contracting COVID. You've called for transparency. Right. Didn't get much of a response. And recently you called for transparency again from the governor and what's going on and what's being done. Have you had a response to your second call? And where does that stand right now?
Well, that's a great point, Danny. And I must tell you that I'm very disappointed in the reaction from the governor's office. The Veterans Home is a very, very important part of the public health process in New Hampshire. And that's always been a plus for us in terms of the way we treat our veterans. We had the tragedy where 37 people passed away and a number of people had the virus. So I called for the governor to let me know what was going on as a result of a number of inquiries I've had from children of veterans who passed away and wives of parents who have passed away and relatives of parents who have been dealt with at the Veterans Home. I've received no word from the governor's office other than that it's a big ask and they haven't had time to take care of it. That ask went to safety and to Health and Human Services. I've received information, or I will receive information from both of those departments in state government, given them until the 30th of the month to give me some information. But obviously the governor has heard these problems because people have contacted the governor's office. There's been communication between the governor's office and these people, and their reaction was, "Gee, governor, what the heck's going on? It give me the real scoop." And indeed, we haven't had that, and that's very disappointing.
Yeah, well, one of the things that Lou, you and I, and others worked on, one of the many things, was passing legislation, House Bill 1246, to make sure there was additional financial support for our nursing homes because we have a worst-in-the-nation crisis in COVID in our nursing homes here in New Hampshire, unfortunately, and additional financial support, an independent audit and review with a needs assessment to help, including with the New Hampshire Veterans Home. That was vetoed. I understand that Senator Rosenwald has filed something similar to that. Is that going to be a major priority of you and Senator Rosenwald moving forward? Obviously, you're shining a spotlight on it right now.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I did write an op-ed piece about the nursing homes. It's interesting that you mention this, Danny, because in the AARP magazine of the January issue, there was a story about nursing homes, and Hillsborough County's nursing home was one of the featured items. So it's something that not only is of concern to people in New Hampshire, but it's a national concern.
Lou, are you old enough to subscribe to that AARP magazine?
Listen, my subscription's been in place for quite a while now. I age gracefully, though, Dan.
Yeah, you sure do. Well, Lou, one of the things we were talking about last week, Ken and I, is that the Iowa Hawkeye basketball team ranked fifth in the nation.
Yes.
12-2. You know, 6-1 in the Big Ten. Their two losses were to Gonzaga at a neutral site and on the road to Minnesota. Minnesota's got a tough team. Who do you think's going to take this? Lou always has a pretty good sense of this.
He has a handle on it. You know that Lou. I don't mean to interrupt, but I will. You know, Lou was the first. You were the first basketball coach at New Hampshire College, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Which is now SNHU. Well,
yep.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
That's and where was New Hampshire College located at the time that you were the head coach, Lou?
Well, they were located at 88 Hanover Street, downtown Manchester.
Yeah.
And, no kidding.
Yep. Wow. And we moved out to the campus in the 70s, I was head coach and director of athletics for about 15 years, and we had some wonderful kids, wonderful players, and. We actually led the nation in scoring, the NAIA, one year. We averaged 102 points a game, which was quite amazing. I had some wonderful players. You know, it's all about players.
102 points a game. That's an offense.
Yeah, it is. Well, we really ran. You know, I was affiliated with Don Nelson and Tom Sanders of the Celtics. We ran a basketball camp. And, you know, I'd go to their training camp. And I got a lot of the drills from Tommy Heinsohn. And fast break was his key item, and we did break, and we did a good job. The kids, the players did a good job, so we were very, very pleased with that. So, but, you know, how many people know that I was a basketball coach? Very few, but I had a wonderful relationship with Governor Walter Peterson, who was a former basketball player, and Walter would come to some of our games. We had a wonderful relationship, and I still, to this day, have a relationship with Tom Sanders. We talk once a week, and Nellie, who's living out in Hawaii now, I touch base with Nellie and his wife Joy, so it was a great time in my life, I must say.
The running and gunning penman under Coach Dellis Endro, you talk about Satch Sanders and Don Nelson, two great Celtics of the past, and unfortunately, just in recent months, we've lost both Tommy Heinsohn and Casey Jones, and what an impact they had.
Yep, both great, great players, and Casey was a wonderful friend of mine, and Hawk, Tommy Heinsohn was a great friend of Tom Sanders, actually. He was assistant coach when Heinsohn was head coach of the Celtics, and, you know, we're losing those people. We've lost Havlicek, we've lost Ramsey, we've lost Heinsohn, lost Casey Jones, and lost Jim Luskatoff.
Yeah.
Time's flying on us, guys.
It is. So we have to make up for lost time here. And, so, you know, COVID is a huge issue. There's no doubt about that. But what, you know, we've heard, you know, over the years about the opioid crisis in New Hampshire. We haven't heard a whole lot about that recently because of COVID. But that still has to be a concern. I know that, you know, during these times, since last March, drug abuse and alcohol usage have been on the increase.
Yeah, no question. Absolutely no question. Drug abuse is on the increase in Manchester and throughout the southern part of the state. And certainly alcohol consumption has, you know, it is what it is. And that's a problem. It's been pervasive for a number of years. All of these things we have to deal with. But the COVID situation has really taken center stage. And we've got to get everybody vaccinated, because we need an 80% acceptance of the vaccine in order to create herd immunity. We need that in order to get back functioning in a normal fashion. So a lot of challenges, Ken, a lot of challenges. And we don't have Danny there to help us, so we're going to depend on his outside influence. And this radio program will do that.
This is it.
He's got the bully pulpit now, Lou.
He does. He has the bully pulpit.
Everybody's listening to this right now. Everybody.
They sure do.
There's no doubt about that. You know, I was telling Dan before the show today, Lou, that I ran and was in the legislature for 2 years, from 2003 and 2005, when Craig Benson was governor. And the only reason I ran for two reasons, Lou. You and my great late friend Frank Sullivan. You're the two reasons I ran. And try and do my best to get expanded gaming going in New Hampshire.
Oh, for sure.
So is there any glimmer of hope, Lou? Do you still hold on to any hope that we could get a casino here in the state?
Well, there's a glimmer of hope, and we're going to look at that in the second year of the biennium, because this charitable gaming has gotten as many casinos as Cotta has Little Liverpool.
Right.
So we got them all over the place. The idea is they don't function, in my opinion, in an effort that provides the state with some revenue and in a fashion that I think has to be. So we got something to look at, and let's hope for the best.
Well, looking at the charitable gaming, I know Senator O'Dell did a big report on that.
You were part of that.
I believe that another committee or commission is looking at this or has looked at it. Is that the case?
Well, I've got a bill sponsoring a commission to look at it, and I hope we get that through because I think it's very important. Charitable gaming has become a massive industry here in New Hampshire, and it's got to be looked at.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's got to be looked at.
The state has to get more money out of it. That's for sure. There's no doubt in my mind. In fact, you know what the ultimate irony is in my mind? There is a quote-unquote casino in downtown Concord. That's owned by a former senator, as you well know.
Senator Sanborn, who couldn't stand casino gambling.
Right. There's the ultimate irony.
Funny how the worm turns, huh?
It doesn't have to make sense, Lou.
Right. Nothing makes sense.
Let me ask you, since you're a great budget guy and have been for so many years, how have revenues, have they suffered since COVID last month here in the state?
Well, believe it or not, the revenues are pretty good. They're ahead of plan.
Yep.
So that's a good thing. The key will be the March and April returns.
Yeah.
Those will be key. And hopefully they're going to be okay. But we can't reduce taxes any more than we have. We'll lower the business enterprise tax. We've lowered the business profits tax. We got rid of the electric consumption tax. You know, we've done the number. We've made, I think, 35 or 36 changes in taxes over the course of the last decade. So we got to hold fast and hope for the best.
Well, one of the things Ken mentioned, Lou, earlier was the opioid epidemic, which overdose is going up, especially in Manchester. The budget that you and I helped work on included increased funding for treatment, including reimbursement rates to maintain and sustain treatment providers on the ground. That increase, as you may recall, Lou, in April was unilaterally cut by the governor. Is there any indication that where the revenues are right now, that kind of support for treatment will either be re-upped or will be included in this budget proposal?
Well, we hope that both of those things can take place. A, it's re-upped, and B, it's in the new budget.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a problem, and it's a significant problem. I got a call from the the federal drug enforcement people 2 weeks ago, letting me know about the problems in Manchester and letting me know that meth is back on the table in Manchester. And actually, there was a drug raid in the area that I represent. So it's got to be taken care of, and they need help, and we've got to produce the revenues to make that happen. And treatment is so important. You know that.
I've
been involved in that for a long time.
So, Lou, you mentioned earlier that you're working remotely now. How does that work?
Well, it's difficult. You know, I'm a people person. The big thing in my life is contact with people, looking at them eye to eye, and, you know, saying hello, shaking hands, and so forth. It's difficult. But we're doing it well. I think the Senate's doing it well. I got a hearing this afternoon, as a matter of fact, at 1:30 on a piece of legislation. So And we met remotely, and I think everything, given the circumstances, everything went well. But when you have 24, you know, it's a lot easier than 400.
Yeah, no doubt. But that that face-to-face contact and that
is key,
that,
right?
It's key. I mean, working together, sitting down, yep. talking through things, and yep. I mean, I don't know how many hours Lou and I have spent together just. Some might call it shooting the bull, but we were getting things done and just going over stuff. I mean, that's critical, and you don't have that in this new environment. Certainly, I think the substitute is just a bunch of phone calls and Zooms.
Right. It's problematic when you can't be together.
Yeah.
Because you've got to establish relationships and. You talk about things and you get the feeling as to where other people are on certain issues, and you can have a good discussion, and we have good debate on the Senate floor. So those things are missing, but hopefully they'll be coming back soon.
So now let's just talk about a very important topic here, Lou. When are we going to get a hockey team back in Manchester or in New Hampshire?
Kenny, you know, the great tragedy was the loss of the Monarchs. We would attend a lot of those games. I could, you know, New Year's Eve was the great celebration.
Yeah.
I'd bring my grandchildren there, and it was such a great event. Tremendous loss for our community. When the Kings pulled out, when they their AHL affiliate, it was devastating. And the second, the replacement team just didn't do it, just didn't make it. So we hope for the best. I mean, the hockey was an anchor tenant. We don't have it. It would be great if we could get the Bruins or the Canadiens in here to give us an affiliate. So we hope for the best in that regard, because it provided a sense of being a great place for entertainment and a good feeling for the community that this is our team. And we had great support. I think we did very well attendance-wise. But when the league decided to move their affiliates closer, and they moved our team, went out to the West Coast, it's out in California now, and the cost of bringing people back and forth was exorbitant. So, but let's hope for the best, kid, because we want the voice of the Monarchs back.
Yeah, me too.
Well,
it was a significant revenue loss for me.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
we put that in brackets on the balance sheet.
My concern is that I don't know if there's anybody even working on it. You know, it's not just going to happen. I mean, it doesn't happen like that.
Things don't just happen. People have to work on it.
Yeah.
So That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, Senator D'Alessandro, always a pleasure, and glad we could reunite
you,
the D'Alessandro Feltus team here on Feltus and Kale. And always a delight, Lou, and we appreciate your time. And
thank you.
Have a great session today at 1:30.
Thank you very much, Kenny, and good luck with this program. I'm sure it's going to be informative. You're going to have good listenership, and you're going to help people become educated on the process of government or whatever else you're talking about. So happy New Year to both of you. Stay happy, stay healthy, have a great, great, great American day, and I look forward to chatting with you again in the future.
Well, you got it, Lou. Give our best to Pat.
I will. Thank you. My best to your family and to those two little girls, Danny.
You got it.
They're growing like weeds, huh?
They are. Kenny, no doubt about it.
Kenny, keep smiling.
I will, Lou. I will. You know that.
And, all right. Thank you, guys.
And you have a great American day as well.
Thank you, Kitty.
Take care, Lou.
All right. There is the dean of the New Hampshire Senate, Lou D'Alessandro. What a guy. He's done so much in
no
his
doubt
career
about it.
For so many. And one of the great leaders in our state.
The epitome of a public servant.
He is. That's very well put. This is Feltus and Kale, and we are on 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com, and a delight to have you with us. Feltus and Kale, show number 2. And Dan, they said it wouldn't last.
They said it wouldn't last. They were going to cancel it.
The critics said, a former Democratic gubernatorial candidate couldn't work with a far right winger. No, I'm not too far to the right. I'm not too far to the right.
We proved the pundits wrong, Ken.
We did. And we hope to do that for a long time to come. Dan Feltus, Ken Kale. You know, Dan, do you have any concern about free speech being suppressed in this country, as we've seen over the last few weeks, President Trump having his Twitter account banned, taken off of Facebook? But it's not just him. It's many conservatives as well. And, you know, if it could happen to them, it could happen to anyone. Are you concerned at all about that?
Well, look, I think that these companies are taking courses of action that obviously could be debated, but there is a pretty clear exception to free speech where the speech is meant to incite violence or threat security or safety. So that's pretty grounded in United States Supreme Court case law. So obviously folks who are, you know, potentially have their Twitter account suspended can try to take action, and whether or not it's considered not to have been inciting, that's up to each individual in those transactions. So we'll see how it plays out. But certainly, Ken, I think that with respect to the outgoing president, I think it was appropriate.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a matter of debate for sure. But they take down the entire Parler, which was, a rival of Twitter. And, there were lots of people. I think the Ayatollah is still on Twitter, but they shut down Parler completely. The new kid on the block, basically, I guess if you had to put it one way, it was basically the conservative form of Twitter, but it was completely shut down. And it just, to me, is reprehensible.
Well, I think if you look at, there's certainly, like I said, there's going to be debates, no doubt, and there is a reaction, and I think reasonable reaction to what occurred over the last couple of weeks, inciting an insurrection at the Capitol, and the conduct and some of the activity since then. I think the reaction is an overabundance of caution to stop potentially this from escalating. I think you're absolutely right, Ken. I mean, people are going to be talking about this for months, if not years, in terms of what occurred and what is occurring and the reaction to it by private companies.
And, of course, one of the new kids on the block in the media world is Newsmax, which is, kind of a rival of Fox in the sense that they are both conservative networks. And now CNN, the bastion of liberals, wants the conservative Newsmax to be, done away with on most cable providers. And, things are not going in the right direction in this country. And I'm not just saying that because Newsmax is a conservative network. But this cancel culture is very scary.
Well, look, I mean, I'm not familiar with what CNN's arguing in terms of Newsmax, but in terms of where we're going in debate, free speech, an open, honest discussion of facts is critical to our democracy. It's critical to how we move forward. If there are incitement of, an insurrection or call to arms or to fight and continuing to spread the false information about the election, those things are different. You and I talked about it, Ken, last week. It's getting back to public policy debates and discussions about what's happening in the real world and people's lives. That's what it's about. But you have to start from the basic set of facts. You can't just make stuff up. And so some of these entities that are doing that, it's not helpful to our democracy. It's not helpful to the basis of the First Amendment, free speech.
Right.
Free speech is about airing your views and opinions based on a common foundation of underlying facts. It's not about, making stuff up, baseline facts.
And I think, you know, it's not just President Trump and, you know, Twitter. They can do what they want, obviously. But I think there are 75 million people out there, many of whom right now feel totally disenfranchised by what has taken place over the last few weeks with high tech. And 75 million people feel that they no longer have a voice.
Well, I think that, you know, everybody has a voice in our democracy. That's what this election was about. And, you know, 75 million people roughly voted for outgoing President Trump. Roughly 81 million voted for incoming President Joe Biden. And, you know, obviously the Electoral College was, I think, 306 for Biden, well past the 270 necessary to become president. So there's a process. And every election, the way it works, it's zero sum, Ken. The folks who vote for a losing candidate always are disappointed. I understand that, and I get that. You know, I just lost an election. I understand
that. Yeah, I hear you.
But that's the way the process is. And you have to move on. You have to move forward. And it's incumbent upon all of us to do the best that we can to help move forward. And I know Joe Biden tomorrow, it sounds like the president-elect is going to give a speech focused on trying to unify the country. And that's what's needed right now, Ken, is to focus on that, to talk about our commonalities, our common values and beliefs, and how we can work together to deal with this pandemic, to deal with this economic crisis that's really crushing working class families.
But I know, and I may be among them, I am among them, one of the 75 million who feel disenfranchised to a certain extent. At least I have this radio show. But Biden claims to be the great unifier. And we'll see. The jury's still out, obviously. But that was one of his big deals. I mean, basically, Joe Biden conducted his quote-unquote campaign from a bunker in Delaware. I mean, that's basically what he did. So nobody really knew what his platform was until, you know, just recent weeks. So my thing is, all right, here's another impeachment against Trump, number two. So he goes down in history as being the first president ever to be impeached twice. And now there's a possibility, and a real one, that Nancy Pelosi is going to pass that impeachment on to the Senate. And now there's going to be more unrest in the country because they're impeaching a president who is out of office. I mean, is that going to unify the country? Is that one step to unify the country?
Well, I mean, first, Ken, I do think that throughout the course of the campaign, Joe Biden laid out his policy positions pretty clearly. And I think, you know, on the website and beyond, you know, and talked about him, had policy rollouts, had a comprehensive clean energy policy, working with clean energy leaders and labor leaders on good, clean energy jobs right here in the United States. So I think he was very clear about his policy positions. I think in terms of whether or not impeachment, which actually happened, you know, with him in office, the conviction, you're right, Ken, by the U.S. Senate has not occurred yet and has not been taken up yet. But, I mean, there is historical precedent about, you know, the Senate taking up convictions of impeachments when folks have left office, including judges and cabinet secretaries. So it's certainly something that's happened in the past. And I think, and quite frankly, in terms of accountability, I think it should move forward.
Yeah, but nobody really cares about judges or cabinet officers, really. 75 million people voted for Donald Trump. And now we might have to go through, I mean, it's just, to me, it's a colossal, if nothing else, a colossal waste of time that continues to divide the country. The guy's out of office. What's he going to do?
Well, I do think that you're absolutely right. The first 100 days, too, are critical to getting your agenda through. And, you know, President-elect Joe Biden has an ambitious agenda they laid out, infrastructure investments, creating good middle-class jobs, getting people out of this mess, a new stimulus package to make sure it targets working-class and middle-class families who have been left out and left behind in this recovery so far to a large extent. And, you only have so much airtime. So I don't know how the U.S. Senate's going to take it up. I do think accountability is important. Accountability is important for our Constitution, our rule of law, and our democracy.
Well, I think two impeachments disgraces Trump enough. That would be my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not he would be convicted in the Senate, that, I guess, remains to be seen. Hopefully, we'll never know because it won't get that far, but I have a feeling that it will. And then they have to, the way the Constitution reads, I guess, Dan, is that if the impeachment goes to the Senate, that has to be first on the agenda every day. So the first portion of the day, every day, will be an impeachment trial in the Senate, which is, to me, a waste of the taxpayers' money, for one thing.
Well, I think they could probably move it, just make a motion to suspend the rules and punt it a little bit. But I think the good news is you're seeing, in the U.S. Senate, you're seeing Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell work on a similar power-sharing arrangement when it was 50-50. The last time it was 50-50 in 2001. And that's a good thing. And obviously, the Democrats have the majority by virtue of Vice President Kamala Harris, so in the U.S. Senate, and as a consequence of the Georgia election, where John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock, Democrats, won and beat the incumbent Republican U.S. senators. So it's going to be an interesting few months and next year, no doubt about it, 2021. And we'll see how it all unfolds. But I'm hopeful, based on what has been talked about in terms of President-elect Joe Biden's inaugural address tomorrow, that it'll get off on the right foot.
He has about, I believe, a dozen executive orders that he wants to institute very early on in his presidency. Mm-hmm. When he took office, George W. Bush had zero executive orders. Or Barack Obama, zero executive orders. I think Donald Trump had one. And now Biden wants to get 12 executive orders through.
Well, look, I think President Trump has done a lot of executive orders, and I think some of those executive orders that President-elect Joe Biden...
Well, I'm just talking about on the first day of his presidency.
Yeah, I think they're ready to go. His transition team has been working hard, and I think that's a good thing. They're prepared. They're ready to go, Ken.
They're ready to go. Ready to go. And the other thing, there are so many things on the list of Biden's agenda that, get me riled up. I mean, ending the construction of the Keystone Pipeline, which provides so many jobs, it's just really annoying. In the immigration issue, but another one that most people aren't talking about is the $15 minimum wage in the middle of a pandemic. And how many businesses, it's great, to make 15 bucks an hour. I mean, if a lot of businesses don't pay that right now. But how many small businesses that's going to hurt over time, and not over much time either. If that's instituted, that's going to put some people out of business, or staffs are going to be cut back at many restaurants, for example, or small businesses, convenience stores, whatever, fast food restaurants. I mean, it's going to hurt a lot of people.
Well, I think we should start with the baseline premise that no one should work hard and live in poverty. And that's what's happening right now, and including frontline workers, grocery store workers, retail workers, living in poverty, working hard, in many cases, multiple jobs, trying to make ends meet with their family, all while juggling remote learning with their kids and everything else. There's a lot of stressors, and next week we'll talk more about the issues affecting working families. But certainly that's a big issue. And the second issue, if you do it gradual, all the research says that gradual increases don't have the kind of impacts that people are worried about, especially with respect to small businesses. And more money in our economy means our consumer spending goes up. People spend locally, by and large, that's good. It's good for our economy.
But I'm worried about the people who have been hard hit. We know how difficult it's been for the restaurant business. So so many have closed down. So many small businesses have been impacted. And now, if this goes through, many may have to shut. Many more may have to shut down. Some workers will be let go because they can't afford to pay, X number of employees $15 an hour. I mean, it's just not realistic. I mean, it's great that, you know, people don't have to live in poverty. What's wrong with a second job? Many people have always had second jobs. This is a country of hard workers. And, you know, I just think it's going to hurt more people than it helps.
Well, I certainly agree. You shouldn't snap your fingers and go to 15. If you do it gradual, though, Ken, you mitigate some of those concerns. And also agree the restaurant industry has been crushed, especially in New Hampshire. And we had Senator D'Alessandro on. He and I wrote to the governor and requested that the business funds through the CARES Act money that the governor took unilateral control over that was delivered to the state of New Hampshire by Senator Hassan and Senator Shaheen, that money be geared towards helping small businesses in particular, Main Street businesses with lower revenue, and our restaurant industry in particular, especially with wintertime getting hit, not as much outdoor seating. You see it in the paper. It looks like Cheers has these little igloos that they're putting up.
Yeah, that's nice. Have you eaten one of those yet?
No, not yet.
I'm looking forward to it. No, I haven't, but I would like to. Yeah, I think it's, you know, people, one thing we've seen during this pandemic, Dan, which is a good thing, is a lot of creativity.
No doubt.
You know, really. And some things that will stay that way. I mean, like the igloos at Cheers, for example, in downtown Concord. And the sidewalk dining in Manchester, which I understand is going to be expanded when, you know, you can eat on the sidewalk again. I think it's great, and I think that's creative. There have been some, not many, but some good things come out of this pandemic.
Yeah. And look, credit to all the people who are innovating, doing these things. Small business leaders are... And you talk about people juggling and being creative. Our teachers, on a whim, just, you know, moments notice, doing everything they can to help our kids. You know, working parents. You know, Senator D'Alessandro mentioned earlier, we got two young daughters, Iris and Josie, and juggling work and family right now is so difficult. And parents are doing everything they can, and people are stretched and. They're coming up with new creative ideas to juggle things, to make things work. It's really interesting. And, a lot of people out there are struggling, Ken, and doing the best they can. And I think all they want is a state government, local government, and federal government that's going to look out for them, help them out a little bit. Not guarantee equal outcomes, but at least equal opportunity and at least have a shot in this pandemic to get by.
Well, you mentioned your daughters. I have two old daughters, Amanda and Melissa, and both very intelligent young ladies, and they both supported Bernie Sanders. Where did I go wrong as a parent, Dan? Where did I go wrong? I thought I did a pretty decent job. They're both well-educated, a lot more educated than I am, but they're both supporting Bernie Sanders. So
Thanksgiving is rigorous debate.
On that note, we're going to have to take a break and then wrap things up. It's Feldis and Kale, 103.9, 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldis and Kale, for one quick final segment. I know you're very concerned with those Iowa Hawkeyes. You know, Lou never mentioned who he thought. Lou D'Alessandro was on with us earlier in the program.
Oh, we have to have him on again.
I know. Well, we have left that up in the air, who we thought was going to win the national championship. What about you?
Oh, boy. I mean, Gonzaga has got a heck of a team. And they're, you know, look, they can beat you many different ways. So I think they're the odds-on favorite, but... you never know, don't count out those Hawkeyes just yet, Ken.
And don't count out those UConn Huskies.
They're good, too.
They're back.
They're back.
They're back with a vengeance. And we'll see. My oldest daughter went to UConn. That's why I'm a UConn Huskies fan. And I lived in Connecticut for a little while myself. But all right. So matchups this weekend in the NFL. Any picks? Who's going to the Super Bowl?
I think you got to. I mean, the Chiefs fended off a tough run by the Browns, and I think the Chiefs are. I think the Chiefs are probably the most well-rounded team.
Well, I think Brady's going to do it again.
You think so?
I really do. I really do. I think they're peaking at just the right time, and I think Brady is going to do it again, despite the fact he's going to have to play in cold weather in Green Bay over the weekend. He's never been a great cold weather quarterback, but it's going to happen.
Well, do you think it's going to be Buccaneers versus Chiefs in the Super Bowl?
I do. Yep. In Tampa.
Yep.
All right. First time a home team has ever hosted Super Bowl.
It might be meant to be.
All right. Dan Feltes, Ken Kale, we will see you next time around. Thanks, Dan.
You got it. Have a great week.